Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Travel Podcast, where we interview leaders in the sports event industry. This is Jason Gewirtz, Vice President of the North Star Meetings Group Sports Division and the Executive Editor and Publisher of Sports Travel. And our guest on this episode is a return guest, the President and CEO of the Sports and Fitness Industry Association, Tom Cove. Tom will be on to walk through the treasure trove of data that is available in the SFIA's new Topline Participation Report, which details which sports are on the upswing when it comes to people participating and which are on the way down. And in between, we'll cull through the data to talk about trends that sports event organizers, destinations, and venues should all be aware of as they make their decisions about future events. It's incredible information, and we can't wait to share it with you. But before we begin, this episode of the Sports Travel Podcast is being sponsored by Visit Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Nothing brings people together like sports, and no place brings people together like the beach, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. There, you'll find first-class facilities and an experienced planning team that will make sure your sports or esports event goes off without a hitch. And when the game ends is when the real play begins, because the beach is 60 miles of endless activities and entertainment for all ages. Your event belongs at the beach. Start planning at myrtlebeachsports.com. And now, on to the conversation. Every year, the Sports and Fitness Industry Association, or SFIA, takes on a number of research projects designed to offer insight into the world of sports through the lens of participation, equipment sales, and other metrics. But the Topline Participation Report is one of the longest-standing and most ambitious surveys the organization conducts. Each year, thousands of people are surveyed about which one of 124 different activities they participate in and how often. The end result is a wealth of data and trends that tracks which sports are gaining popularity and which are struggling. You may have heard the stat that pickleball is the fastest growing sport in the United States. Well, that's true, and that stat comes from and is verified by this report, which shows the wildly popular sport up another 50% in participation just in the past year. We'll go into why that remains the case, but the pickleball data only scratches the surface of this report. And in an Olympic year, when many otherwise obscure sports get their highest visibility, you can expect some interesting things in the year ahead, which we'll go into as well. Another trend that's on the rise is team sports. More and more people are participating as a group and they're loving it. And we'll go into which team sports they're liking the most. All of this information is invaluable for those who are in the business of organizing and hosting sports events. And the best news of all, both for the industry and for humankind, is that overall, participation in sports events is up and inactivity is down, a trend that we can all get behind. So sit back and enjoy this conversation with SFIA President and CEO Tom Cove as we dive into the data to pick out all the trends that you need to know. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Tom Cove, welcome back to the Sports Travel Podcast. It's great to see you again.
It is my pleasure to be here. Always love this conversation.
I do too. We don't have too many return visitors, but this one I actually I welcome and I appreciate, because SFIA, the organization that you have been leading for quite a while now, does so many things. One of the things that it does incredibly well is research. And, you know, without data and some numbers to look at from time to time, it's hard to set a path for where the trends are going and where the organizations in our universe should be investing. And so we are going to be talking today about your Topline Participation Report, one of many reports that the SFIA puts together. And I have always found it fascinating just to take a deep dive into the types of research that you guys are putting together, what sports are up, what sports are down. I've always argued that the audience of sports tourism and sports-related travel should be looking at trends, the likes of which that SFIA puts together. So thanks for being on with us, Tom. I do also enjoy this conversation. We tend to go fairly deep. I will prove to you again that I go beyond the executive summary. I did read that. But you've got hundreds of pages in here, and I don't know, I'm a kind of a data nerd at heart, so I like taking the deep dive. So anyway, that's my preamble for you. It's great to see you again, Tom. And we've had you on in the past, and I feel like just very briefly at the beginning, since we are going to be talking about this specific report that's just come out, it is good to do just a very quick level set on how many people you talk to for this thing and how long you've been doing it, because I think that does provide some context. So as always, Tom, just if you wouldn't mind, a quick recap on the breadth of this particular study that we're going to be talking about.
Sure. So we're in the field. First of all, SF, thanks for letting us come on. We always appreciate being here. SFI leads a consortium of seven national organizations in the sports business, U.S. Tennis Association, National Golf Foundation, IRSA, Health Club, Outdoor Foundation, Outdoor Industry, a couple of others. And we are in the field every month with about 1,500 people who we survey. So we have 18,000 respondents for this survey, which is far, far bigger than almost anybody else does. It asks specifically American 6-year-olds and over, and if it's under 13, we ask parents, what sports they played, where they played, how much they played, how many times, how much they spent, what they're batting, all the demographics of gender, age, income, family income. And we really focus on trend. Where is the movement? We measure 124 sports activities, recreation activities, everything from the traditional team sports to kayaking and climbing to fitness activities like weightlifting or Tai Chi, and even things like swimming and walking for fitness. So it is a national study that is in the field every month, and we put out an annual set of data, and our top one just came out. And to the point of trend, we've been doing it about 50 years, but since 2007, we changed our methodology there. So from 2008 to now, it's a very rigorous approach towards being able to measure change year to year with respect to sports participation. And it is only in North America, only in the United States.
Gotcha. Excellent. Well, thank you for that overview as always. Let's start macro and then we'll take a dive in. One of the great takeaways here, Tom, is that people are participating in things. This is a trend we continue to see. This is one, as we've talked about in the past, is not a given that that number is going to go up. And yet over the past year, according to your research, it looks like, if I'm doing the math right, about eight of 10 people say that they are participating in something of all of those 100 plus activities you guys measure. That in itself, I would imagine, is a positive development, that that number appears to be gradually going up.
It's a huge development. And in basically, the number is of did you do something of the 124 activities and sports and activities? And in the last 5 years, that number has gone from about 218 million people that did something from a total of, if you take out the younger kids under six, with, you know, it's probably 300 million, about 300, maybe just under, but to 242 million. That's a percentage of the United States from about 72% to almost 79%. And I don't know how people react to that, but that is a huge deal. That's basically a lot more people are doing something. And it's not the most important marker, quite honestly, but it is a fascinating and key indicator that our country has recognized the need and desire to be more physically active in the period through and post-pandemic. And the other point is what you said, Jason, because you know this data. The previous years from 2018 to 2008, it was pretty much stuck at about 72%, 80 million people, 81 million people with a little bit of an increase in population. So you can't take for granted the idea that it has grown by approaching 24 million people as a whole is really fundamentally important. And we have to recognize at the same time, it's not like all those people are out playing all the time. It is a base measure and you build from there.
Well, and let's talk about that. You touched on it before. One of the things I like about your research, you not only gauge people's participation casually in a sport, but you also gauge what you call core participation, people who are doing this on a regular basis, which can be an indicator as well, particularly as we look a little deeper into the specific sports and activities that you guys measure. And that number is up as well, the number of people who are spending a little more time, you know, sort of these core participants in sports. There's something there too, I would imagine.
It's huge there. And that's important at a business level and at a health of sport level. At a health of sport is a core player. For us, that is a frequency measure. It's not attitudinal. It's not necessarily a self, we don't ask them, do you consider yourself core or whatever? That's too subjective. What it is a frequency measure that we determine how many times you have to play to be a committed athlete and fairly serious, and you're going to buy stuff, you're going to follow stuff, you're going to play. And so it changes according to the sport. So for skiing, it might be like eight times. You ski eight times a year, you're a serious skier. For running, it's 50 times. For most team sports, it's either 13 or 26, which again is to make a core player. And that means that, you know, obviously for high school kid or travel kid who's 16 years old, 26 times to be on a travel team is, you know, you're in preseason almost. But for a kid who's playing at 6 or 7 years old on a soccer team to play 1 week before the season, to have two practices, then you practice once a week and you play once a week and you play 8 weeks. Okay, now we're at about 16 times or something like that. So we have to measure it so that it captures everything. The point is, core represents strength and sustainability of any sport. And what we've seen in the last 4 years, it is an increase against all, when you consolidate it together, increase in core participation. It's frankly even a better sign than the overall number going bigger, that the core number growing in a consistent manner suggests that the country is committing in a way, and frankly spending money in a way, and ordering their lives in a way to really fit sports in an important way to their lifestyle.
Excellent. Well, let's start diving in here a little bit. There's a lot of stuff to chew on of all your activities that you measure. Of course, it's a mix of individual sports, it's team sports. And one of the takeaways this year, Tom, seems to be on the team's sport side. More people appear to be participating in general in team-related sports. That number is up. And we can go into some of the specific sports, but just in general, that's interesting. Almost all the team sports that you measure, if I was reading it right, appear to be on the increase.
That's absolutely correct. Team sports, we measure, we have the 124 sports, we have seven categories. So fitness, outdoor, team, individual, winter, water, and racket sports. And what we look at when we break those down is trend against, you know, so there's 24 team sports we measure. They got hurt, team sports got hurt almost the most of any category during the COVID pandemic. For the obvious reason that schools and facilities were closed and you couldn't, team by nature means you're getting together. So that's understandable. The same thing with fitness club activities suffered. Those were the two most things you could do by yourself outside, running or play tennis or golf, boom, during COVID. Okay. So we knew there was a downside. Then we saw a slow recovery, but the slow recovery wasn't quite as fast in team as we had hoped. And part of that is because teams broke up. And when teams break up, it takes longer to get them back together. And, you know, use the example of a 10-year-old kid who's kind of the eighth person on a basketball team. If you take 3 years off, they didn't really like, they weren't like that into basketball. They were there with their friends and it made sense, et cetera. And they'd been on the team for 3 years. But if you go to 13, you know, go from 10 to 13 and you haven't played for 3 years, you're probably not joining that team again unless you really love basketball. But now you've got the new kids coming in. So this year we saw a significant bounce for team sports participation, which we predicted. And as an example, last year, team sports overall participation went up, but it was led by the big three or four or five biggest ones, basketball, flag football, soccer. This year, and so 5 out of 24 went up, but the other ones did not last year, but the overall number. This year, way better. 20 of 24 team sports went up, and the overall number went up even more.
Yeah, and some of the sports that caught my eye, not surprising based on stories we write about in sports travel and just conversations I have with cities, swimming way up, volleyball. That one is not a surprise. If you've been anywhere near a major city convention center on any weekend of the year, that will not come as a surprise. I saw cheerleading, you know, on that list also, Tom, of some of the sports near the top of that list that are gaining the most and a similar capacity. If you're anywhere near another a convention one of center of late.
You know. Yes, another one of interest, not a convention center, but of interest to a lot of your folks would be fast pitch softball. Mm. And you note a couple of things. First of all, a lot of those are a lot of girls really in those sports. And girls kind of took a little longer to get back into the formal team and the travel side and the commitment side, not the commitment, but the kind of order their lives back and all that, rebuild the teams. And the second thing is, there's just an incredible opportunity now with so many athletes who are both specializing, but then there's also people who are moving out of a sport, but they're athletes. They want to go into something else and they're desiring to compete at a high level. So we're seeing that broad choice of volleyball, basketball, same kind of potential athlete who have two choices now versus just one. And if one didn't work, then they go to the other. Swim team and water polo in those options. So, we're seeing exactly that. It is a breadth of growth and could not agree more that in volleyball, you're seeing these tournaments that offer so much more capacity than the one or two high school teams cannot. We love high school sports, but the fact is there's still only 12 boys and girls that play on the varsity basketball team, and you could have a massive number. And the way in which people are using facilities, convention centers, let's say, for volleyball is a response to demand in a creative and positive way that then generates, you know, a lot of people having a good experience. People, kids that 15 years ago didn't make the team, they got nothing. This year, they didn't make the team. There's a bunch of opportunities, and they get to have the fun and the excitement, the competition, the friends, the travel, all of that. So it's really quite exciting.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this later, but I think I'm going to ask you now at this point in the conversation. You mentioned a couple of sports, swimming, probably your biggest gainer, I think, of, on the team sports. You talked about water polo, even volleyball. There's a theme here. These are all Olympic sports. And of course, we are in an Olympic year. This summer, the games will be coming to Paris. And then, as we all know, next up, 4 years down the road in Los Angeles, you know, so even more heightened interest, you would argue, at least in the United States, as we lead up to that. What kind of trends do you typically see, Tom, you know, in an Olympic year for sports like this? I mean, swimming is a great activity. A lot of people do it anyway, but then you're going to see the best of the best, you know, this summer in a way that you may not normally see them, you know, those other 3 years. And so I would think if I'm involved in swimming, this is like the best case scenario. The trends are up, and then we're going to have some amazing high profile stuff coming up with the trials and then the Olympic Games.
Exactly. You're onto something big here, Jason. So we have, in our studies over 34 years, zeroed in on what we call the Olympic bounce. The Olympic bounce is look at the number of participants in certain sports the year before, the year of a Summer Olympics, and the year after. And what we consistently see in certain sports is that they grow significantly in that year of Summer Olympics. And then really, to talk about growth, they often go down in the subsequent year, but not as much as they were 2 years before. So it's a trend of growth. And when you look at it, let's just say in Rio, the Rio Olympic bounce, gymnastics, swimming, beach volleyball, all had significant jumps in the year that they, you know, people watched it and then joined, went out and played. And then the following year went down, but was higher. In Tokyo, which was, as you remember, a goofy year in the sense of it turned out Tokyo 2020 was in fact in 21. Mm-hmm. And then for us in America, in the United States, it's also challenging because the time frame is so tough because you can't get anything sort of real time. And so a lot of the kind of compelling stories, everybody knew what was going to happen by the time they showed them on TV. And even in that, the Tokyo Olympic bounce was in 20, again, not the year that it was actually held. There was a number. It went up. Gymnastics, swimming, fast pitch softball, and volleyball went up in 21. And then it went up again in 22. And that's in Tokyo. We believe the Paris Olympics are going to be the best Olympics in a long time for a variety of it. They're just going to blow it out. They are ready. Everybody else is ready. People feel it. The time frame for us is much better, so you can watch in the afternoon things that are happening at night that are going to be really exciting. And we anticipate a significant Olympic bounce. Beyond that, we not only the LA Olympics, but you have the bounce that's going to happen. Think about it, someone like a Katie Ledecky or a Caitlin Clark, the kind of names that are really out there, who are going to be in the homegrown Olympics. Are you kidding me? It's going to be massive. But also now in the LA Olympics, you've got six what they call optional sports now, what we used to call demonstration sports. And of note, flag football is one of them. Mm-hmm. The NFL is going big. The NFL is doing an incredible amount of outreach in terms of international. You know this, Jason. You've talked to those people. Lacrosse and Native American sport, that's super exciting. Baseball and softball coming back. But think about the idea of baseball bringing pro players in this time, perhaps, where you have an Ohtani playing against Mike Trout, Japan, U.S. It's just a storyline you can't even imagine. And then you've got cricket and squash, where you bring in a more international element and a more global part to L.A. That's just in the next 4 years. But yet there's more, because you have the World Cup in 26, which is a massive growth. soccer is, has come out of COVID as probably, along with a couple of girls' focused sports, the best, most healthy growing sport. And not only do you have the World Cup all over in a two-year run-up, but you have the Copa America in 24 this year in the United States, where you have the best teams from Latin America playing in a real tournament. Brazil, World Cup leader, Argentina, Uruguay, Colombia, places where they have lots of, you know, it's just going to be very exciting. And now you're thinking about a five-year run-up of these global events, Paris, World Cup, LA 28, driving interest and opportunity to grow the game.
Yeah, that's what I talked about earlier, Tom, where I see your data really lining up with the reality of our industry. Yeah, these are sports that I agree are just going to be on the upswing. We recently had Kevin Klipstein from US Squash on the podcast, just talking about squash, one of the many sports you track and that you just mentioned as well. There's a great example. I mean, participation is already heading up, and you can only imagine what that's going to look like over the next 4+ years or so for a sport like that. One thing I'd also say of interest,
excuse me, Jace, for interrupting, but I just I get fired up about this, dude.
No, go for it.
But one other point on this, which is interesting, and I think it might offer some opportunity to some of your listeners, and that is on these global sports coming into the Olympics, rugby was one, flag football is another, lacrosse is another, basketball, they are changing the nature of the traditional game so as to make it more kind of TV friendly and fat and team friendly, turning it over. So, for example, in basketball, 3-on-3, that's a whole new thing in 3-on-3. And they're not, and you know, maybe former pros or whatever, but that generates, you know, like there could be lots of tournaments around for all these 3-on-3 players who didn't make this kind of team but can play that way. Same thing with lacrosse, where it's, you know, they play 11 on a field and now they're going to play 7-on-7. That's what they did with rugby. Flag football, girls, is going to be, you know, high school varsity. We believe very strongly that there's going to be a significant number of high school varsity girls flag football competitive programs by the time LA 28 comes in. And so you see that the nature of the game is also an opportunity to grow it just by changing some of the rules to make it more inclusive and just offer different opportunity.
Yeah, maybe some new data points for you guys moving on as you get more disciplines and more versions of these sports.
As to that point, Jason, sir, we introduced this year, the way we do it is we cover a sport for a couple of years and make sure it's big enough and we can get enough data. But we introduced football 7-on-7 this year in our top line. It's the first time you'll see it in our report. And the reason for that is because we always kind of say, well, is it flag? Is it touch? But it turns out it's really different. And you people know it to be 7-on-7. And at some point, there is a whole world of tournaments being formed around that. It's not, sometimes it's flag, sometimes it's not. But frankly, most of the time, it's not. It's more like touch. And so, we're doing that. And we're going to we're looking at cricket. We're probably going to introduce cricket into our list of sports that we monitor because we think the bounce from the Olympics and the way in which our demographics are changing, that while it won't be all over the country, it might be a place that certain communities, it's going to be a really big deal.
You are listening to the Sports Travel Podcast, which is being sponsored by Visit Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Nothing brings people together like sports, and no place brings people together like the beach, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. There, you'll find first-class facilities and an experienced planning team that will make sure your sports or esports event goes off without a hitch. And when the games end is when the real play begins, because the beach is 60 miles of endless activities and entertainment for all ages. Your event belongs at the beach. Start planning at myrtlebeachsports.com. And now, back to the conversation. All right, we talked about squash. That is obviously a racket sport. So you know we're going to go to racket sports at some point here, Tom, because if for the more, let's say, the more casual readers of your report, not the core readers like us at Sports Travel, Tom, but the more casual readers of your data will know the headline of this, which will not be surprising, that once again, pickleball becomes the, you know, the fastest growing sport, as we call it, based on your data, up 51.8% year over year, an astounding 223% over the last couple years. We've talked about this in the past. Still massive numbers, Tom, but doesn't seem to be going the other direction.
No, it's not. And it's not going to for a while. So first of all, to give some frame of reference, pickleball 223% increase. We haven't seen anything like that for a sport.
Yeah, that's a crazy number.
Never. you think about when sports did boom and bust, and even things like inline skating, which came out of nowhere, and mountain biking when the product developed, or in the tennis boom in the 70s when people just couldn't get enough tennis with Jimmy Connors and all the hot times. We never saw the extended. And the key thing about pickleball is the movement. When you go from 4 million, like they did a couple years ago, last year was 8.9, or 2 years ago, and then our new number is 13.6. That's 50% increase on almost 9 million people. There's only two team sports that are more than 9 million people. Three, excuse me, that's basketball, baseball, and soccer. Everything else is lower than that. So you just as a frame of reference. Now, pickleball does benefit from having this very, very, very wide range of player. And one of the key things we tell people all the time is, first, why is pickleball popular? It's because people can enjoy it quickly. Not only get out there, not only it's accessible and it doesn't cost that much, but they can enjoy play. But a second part of it is it literally has, for growth, its number one age cohort is 25 to 34-year-olds. But the number two is 65 plus, tied with 18 to 24. And then the number three, if you just say, what, you know, when you break it down, it's the just under 65 and it's the 6 to 12. That suggests there is absolute massive growth to be had. So you go, who plays pickleball as a little kid? Well, one, parks and rec departments are saying, okay, this is a great summer activity or camp activity. Two, it's going to be a physical education thing. And three, they play with their parents. And then you go all the way to the other side and you say, if it's already 1.4 million, not last year, but a year ago, people above 65, you know how many people are turning 65 in this country every year? And we have never had a more active 65-year-old and 70-year-old or 75-year-old cohort than they have money, they have time, but they also have the health and the interest. And they're not interested in sitting around. They're interested in doing stuff. So we believe it's a real thing. I know people get tired of it at this point. And then what we say also is, when you think about the way, just look at the television commercials. When you see a drug commercial that uses pickleball as a backdrop, Gronk, the football player, uses it for USAA insurance. E-Trade is using pickleball in their ads, et cetera. It just penetrates social understanding in a way that, well, everybody should be playing pickleball.
Yeah. And Tom, these numbers, 13 million or so, you know, playing pickleball, that's on par with outdoor soccer in your,
yeah,
in your report. That one caught my eye.
Yeah. It's hard to believe. They will be constrained at some point by facilities, and there's going to be certain, like all these people that dive in at some point, they get tired of it. But what we're struck by is how many people, you know, become kind of advocates and kind of zealots about it. It's a sport that does attract people and keep them coming. But it's still, let's be honest, you know, relatively young, and we'll see how it evolves. But we don't see any great degradation for some time.
Yeah. And the last note I'd say on pickleball, again, taking the deep dive in your report, the core number, Tom, up 110% in 1 year. I mean, I imagine that might have caught your eye as well. That's a huge number, and too.
Unprecedented type of number. Nobody has, when you're growing like that, you have a core number bigger than the casual number. The casual plus core equals total. The point is, when you're growing like that, you have a bunch of people that are getting into it at the, you know, in the, you know, getting into it. Those people, you don't go 0 to 60. If you learn how to, you know, do anything, run, golf, ski, you don't go, oh, I've never done it before. Oh, I did it 30 times last month. And in pickleball, there is this weird thing that it just attracts them. We do believe this, the social culture of it is part of it. And we'll see as it gets, it evolves. Is it going to get competitive? Is it going to get costly? Are they going to try to bifurcate all the different kinds of people? They haven't been there yet. Now it's one big happy party, even though it is very highly competitive and they've got TV and they've got tournaments, they got pro leagues, they got sponsorships, and they have, you know, it's just a different kind of thing. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. And for the complete perspective, I mean, we talk about this 13 million number or so that you're reporting or playing pickleball. That number is like 23 million for tennis or something higher than that. So racket sports in general, I mean, we're talking about pickleball, of course, because that's kind of a headline here, is fastest growing. Racket sports in general are up. Tennis is still doing well. I mean, all these other sports you guys measure, it's not just pickleball.
Well, that's a really good point. I'm glad you raised it. Tennis has done remarkably well because it's a legacy sport. It did. It had some benefits from the COVID period, but it hasn't gone down. Last year grew again, not as much as it had for the previous couple of years, but it grew again. It's a remarkable testament to tennis is got real upside. And you, but they've got challenges. They got even competition from pickleball. But they're doing a good job to get better teachers out there, make tournaments better, use technology so people can understand courts, create better rating systems, create social networks, et cetera. So, yeah, tennis and racket sports in general, again, it's lifestyle, Jason. People want lifestyle that they can take their fitness with them and do it regularly.
Yep. Let's just touch on this. I do like to mention this as well. We talked at the outset of this conversation, Tom, about participation levels and activity levels. Not exactly the same, but similar. You also measure inactivity levels, which I also find very interesting. I think it's another indication. And maybe not surprisingly, but again, maybe not a given, inactivity continues to go down. And you saw that across all age groups as well, that number of people who can't find anything on your massive list of activities that they can say that they participated in, that's significant as well.
Yeah, the inactivity rate from the way we do it, different people can mean different things, is the measure of a person who answers our survey and goes through it and says and looks at the 124 activities, sports, fitness, outdoor, winter, water, everything. And says over the last 12 months, nope, didn't do any of them. And you know, I always say, wouldn't you even just lie about it at some point? Right. Say that? That's a remarkable number, right? And it has been hovering at about 81, 82 million people. It's a huge number. Now, there's some people because of their physical situation or because of their whatever situation, they can't do it. There's no question. Let's be clear and let's not in any way, you know, kind of shame in it, because that's not appropriate and not what we want to say. But it is crazy that it's that many people. In the last 5 years, that number, which had been around 80 million and about 27.5% of the American people, it has gone down to now about 65 million last year who are total self-reporting being totally inactive, which is 21% of the American population. Again, dramatic success. We need to do more. It's never going to get to zero, et cetera. But dramatic success, and it does reflect an overall sense that Americans have embraced, especially when they had their sports and fitness taken away from them. Hey, I want it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to take advantage of it. I'm going to pay for it. I'm going to get my kids involved in it. There are benefits, both physical, mental, social, emotional health, and I need to find a way to make it happen.
Yeah. And your report, Tom, is one of the few that I see out there that gets at what we know anecdotally and have talked about for years. And that's an issue of access. You know, it goes without saying, the higher your income, the more likely you are to be active in things or to be able to afford to be active in some of the activities. You know, maybe anyone can go running if they've got a pair of shoes. But if you're talking about organized sports and league fees and equipment and all of these things on there, and you see it in your report, it's one of the few that I see out there, and it won't be a shocker to our audience, but you've got numbers, you know, for the lowest income, those making under 25,000 a year, you know, 38% of those households, if I'm reading your report right, identify as inactive. And those at the highest level, over 100,000, that number is 13%. So you're still seeing that. I mean, that's an ongoing, almost existential issue, I think, for our industry, is how to get, you know, the most people, the most access to participate in things.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Jason. It's the good news is, let's start with the good news, that this, what we call the income activity gap, has diminished in the last 10 years because we measure five in family income levels: 100,000 above 100,000, 75, 50, 25 to 50, and then under 25. Every one of those categories has become more active in the last 10 years, but the gap remains in a unacceptable and serious way. That, as you say, 38% of families under $25,000 family income annually self-report being inactive, and then for people in those families, and then if you add the 25 to 50,000, so under 50,000 family income, is you add 27% to 38%, you know, that's a significantly more than half the population in that group are inactive, whereas when you get it to 100,000, it's in low teen digits. So what, long story, sorry for getting caught up in that, is that we have an obligation as an industry, and I know that you guys in your world do as well, that we've got to use the resources we have to keep accessibility at the front and center of everything we do, while we do a lot of other things. We do excellence in competition. We do excellence in experience. We bring so much joy to people in what we do. We just need to really be intentional about making sure that access against income and maybe other things like just physical access, transportation, is considered as we build things, as we run things, as we operate things, as we invest in different kinds of facilities and programs. So yeah, thanks for bringing it up. I think we all have an obligation to keep it at a level of and do something about it.
Yeah, and there's one question you asked that I love in this report, and we won't go into the deep dive. I think people need to purchase your report because there's a ton of opportunities in this one question where you talk to these inactive people and you say, well, if you did something, you know, what would you like to do? And the only thing I'll mention on that, Tom, is it's not a good time to be a fish, because I think almost everybody said, I want to go fishing. One of the things you do. But as you look down the rest of that list, and I would say for, you know, people listening to that, that to me is where some of this opportunity is. You know, if you start taking that deep dive into the types of things those people say that they might be interested in doing if they were given the opportunity, that to me seems like just a tremendous opportunity for the events industry to offer some programs that could fit that need for those people.
Yeah, we call that the aspirational list. We ask people, you know, we know you didn't do it, but do you want to do anything? And the good news is a lot of people say, yeah, there are some people that say, I'm cool. I don't want to do anything. I love my streaming or whatever it is. But no, most people do say that, and it is lifestyle stuff. It's stuff that you're not going to go from zero to, you know, I'm going to run a marathon. That's just not happening. People do fish, bowl, walk, et cetera. But they also like to do, you know, that's why some things, maybe they did it before a long time ago. And if they could get tennis being a good example, maybe golf, swimming is huge. You know, it's just so healthy and very accessible for a lot of people. So yeah, and we break it out by age, and it's interesting to see what different age groups aspire to. Not shockingly, you know, team sports more for 6 to 12, 13 to 17, 18 to 24. And then that ship sort of sails and people come to terms with what else. But everybody does like to fish. Even the little kids like, I want to go fishing.
Everyone wants to. All right. A couple of quick hits in the time we have left, just sort of random stuff that caught my eye in the report. On that note, I'm a bit of a bird watcher myself. I do a few things on your list of 124, certainly not all of them, but I do go out bird watching. I noticed that that's up 3.8%. So shout out to my bird watchers out there.
Well, you know, people get mad at us. People, it's funny, and you're a pretty healthy, active dude, but people get mad at, why do you have bird watching? That's you know, that's not really an activity. Well, the answer is, for a lot of folks, it's the activity. And if you're a bird watcher, you actually get outside. Being outside is as big a measure of any physical activity as anything. So as a rule, if this country wanted to get people more active, if we could just focus on getting them outside in a free time space, that would be a huge step forward. And then the second thing is, often for people who can't do much of anything else, not that you couldn't, but, and it is a, you know, it is an engagement. You want to make it fun. People, you want to give them, you want to, you know, capture the passion. So I'm all about, let's not get crazy. If we're training for a marathon, bird watch is not going to get it done. But if you're just trying to get Americans more active than they would be, let's go to their heart and deliver the passion and get them outside and give them a chance to walk and kind of follow the goal, whatever that may be.
I'll tell you, bird watching for me in Colorado, where I live, it is walking, it is hiking, and occasionally it's running if you find the right thing. So
you have a list. Are you one of those guys with that list of of, you know, every bird you've ever seen, and you got the thing that you're chasing?
Not quite that obsessive, but I'm trending in that direction, Tom, trending in that direction, which is a little concerning, but that's all right. My son's into it too, so it's a family activity.
Oh, there you go.
I actually enjoyed that one. Winter sports were up. Is that a seasonal thing, Tom? This may seem like a silly question, but is that just the weather conditions were good, so some of your winter sports are up?
Weather has a huge amount to do with it. That's all there is to it. It's and last year we had a really good winter snow season, and winter snow early does terrific, and it lasts a long time, but it also gets people in the mindset. So for now, for example, we're you know, massive snow out in California in the first week in March now. That's great. Good for the water table and all that. Doesn't drive as much participation because people are already starting to think about, oh, I want to go play baseball or I want to go do something in the springtime. So weather is a huge issue there. And when it's good snow, winter sports are going to go. And when the weather comes, if it came, for example, the week before Christmas, it's just a driver because that's when people kind of want to go out and do it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned bowling in passing. I saw bowling sort of steadily up as well. People still like that.
Yeah. So bowling's a classic thing. One of the things I hesitate because it often used to come up as one of the biggest sports in America. We had an issue with that because we call it the birthday party and vacation sport, where bowling for a lot of people is a real sport. They play it. They're in a league, yeah, et cetera. But a huge number of people do it once or twice a year at a birthday party or when it rains on vacation, and they go out as a family. And that doesn't reflect, that goes right to the heart of core versus casual and all that. So bowling, by definition, really got hurt during the COVID restriction period. That's just, they were the classic place that had no chance to open. They couldn't finagle some other reason. The leagues break up, et cetera. But they're going to be fine. They're going to be good because people like the bowl, and there's a, as long as they, those places did not go out of bowling lanes, did not go out of business. It's not a growth area, I got to say, but it's not necessarily, you know, fading away either. It's coming back slowly.
All right. Well, we've touched on a ton of stuff. Were there any other things that we didn't touch on that as a researcher kind of caught your eye or surprised you one way or the other?
Thanks for asking. I think you got it. We do think, I just would say that the way that the travel sports community has become, I think, more inclusive is great. I would just say that in my travels, I give a lot of talks all over the country. The way in which people are investing, they are considering more kind of the revenue model, the heads in beds, the marketing, but also the community use, the impact on community, the building up of facilities to be able that the local folks can use. And I give credit, and I just urge all of you to continue to do that, because that's going to help everybody. And on behalf of all of us, I'd say that's a good thing.
Yeah, excellent. Well, that seems like a terrific way to end. The one thing I would say to all of this, to anyone listening, and to you, Tom, as well, we've talked about a ton of details here, and yet we have not even scratched the surface on this report. This is a massive report with tons of information that we haven't even gotten into in this conversation. So, I would certainly encourage the people in the sports event industry and the people in our typical audience to give this a shot and take the deep dive, because I think there are some fascinating trends in here that should impact the way, you know, their destinations are deciding what types of events to put in. Event organizers are deciding where to put their resources. So let's do a little plug here, Tom. I mean, if people are interested in taking that deep dive, how can they access the report that you guys have put together?
Love it, Jason. Great. SFIA, Sports Fitness Industry Association.org. SFIA.org. You can get, this is called the Top Line Report. It came out last week, in the last week of February. We also put out a report in December. We do it every year in the fall on the deeper dive into the team sports business. And then we put out hundreds of reports about individual sports throughout the year. So if you go to SFIA.org, you can access any of those reports, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. We're very much interested in the dialogue for all those who access our reports.
Excellent. Well, terrific. Well, Tom, thank you so much as always. It is always a pleasure to chat with you. This is a conversation I look forward to now almost every year, at least the last couple of years. I hope you'll be willing to play with us down the road on, you know, taking a look at all of your data in here. I've learned to talk about sports in the core capacity and the casual capacity now, which is a fascinating development too. You have steps away from being on your staff at this point, because I think I understand your language now, Tom. But this has just been terrific. So thank you so much for your time, and certainly hoping that our paths cross here at some point soon.
Absolutely. Yeah, I started, I'll end with, always a pleasure to be with you, Jason. It's a great conversation. Appreciate your interest in all of what your people do every day to provide sports experiences to America's kids and families.
All right. Thank you so much, Tom. This has been another edition of the Sports Travel Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our podcast on all your favorite platforms, including iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Past episodes are also available at sportstravelmagazine.com, which features regularly updated breaking news and in-depth features on stories related to the sports event industry. Be sure to visit us daily at sportstravelmagazine.com, at Sports Travel on X and Instagram, and at Sports Travel Magazine on Facebook and LinkedIn. Until then, this is Jason Gewirz for Sports Travel, and thanks for listening.